life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, bye and bye, I'll fly.
Welcome to the radio program Genesis and the Gates of Hell. Everyone knows the book of Genesis, even if they haven't studied it, but the gates of hell is a less known phrase that is in the New Testament. It is the phrase used by Christ when he was with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi near the Sea of Galilee. Christ was telling his disciples that the church will go on the offensive against Satan, and Satan will not prevail, but the church will prevail. That is what this radio program is about. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Is that true? For a Christian, it is truth. In John chapter 1, it says, "All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." When your children come home from school or college with the notion that the stories in Genesis are untrue because science says it is not true, how do you respond? When you ask, "What are you talking about?" they will generally respond, "Science says so." Your response should be that science has changed, but the Bible has not. You can no longer reject the stories of Genesis because science disproves it, because recent scientific discoveries reaffirm the stories in Genesis. Well, welcome to the next session of Genesis and the Gates of Hell. I'm Marshall Bandy, and Greg Grayson is with me, and we are going through another chapter of Genesis, Genesis 14, entitled "Abram Rescues Lot." So how are you today, Greg?
I'm good. It's good to be with everybody. It's good to be able to spend some time in the Bible with you and everyone. Interesting chapter.
Who was Lot?
I remember that Lot was Abram's nephew. Yeah.
And
he came with Abram. And in the last
he
session...
He came with Abram from the land of...
From where?
Ur?
Yeah.
From the land of Ur. They came together.
Yeah. And in the last session, you remember they got in a bit of a spiff.
Well, the Bible says their herders, the people that worked for them, got into a spiff, and I came to the conclusion, I don't know whether you did or not, was that this was a desert, the desert of, what was it, Zev, or something like that.
Yeah.
And my guess was there wasn't enough grass, vegetation. For all of the animals, because they both had a lot of animals. We talked about the fact that Abram and Sarah wound up with a lot of animals out of Egypt.
Right. The king had given them a great, great wealth. But I don't know. I have the opinion that there was a little bit of a strife between Abram and Lot, and I feel as if Lot was the cause of it.
Well, there's I'll go along with you on this part. Abram was looking to God more than Lot was. Lot was looking toward the approbation of the flesh, the pleasure, the possessions, the good feelings.
Yeah, even Abram said unto Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen."
Well, that means there either was some strife,
yeah,
or he didn't want to develop.
Yeah. And that plays into this chapter. We'll see what happens with Lot.
So why in the world did Lot need to be rescued?
Well, you know, the chapter starts out talking about four kings that had got disgruntled where they were, for what reasons there. They probably weren't kings. Many commentators say they were probably princesses of provinces. Say that real fast.
Yeah, three that's
times.
Right.
Sovereign princes, probably. And they weren't real happy with what they were getting
kingdoms,
from their
kingdoms in that area were not like the kingdom of Egypt.
Not really. They were more like cities that had little rulers, you know.
Yeah, they had their political hacks, and they had the head of the political hacks.
And four of them, and I'm going to butcher their names, Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, this is the good one, Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations. They came together, and Bera, king of Sodom, and Bersha, king of Gomorrah, and several others. So they come together, and they decide that they're going to go take wealth and plunder from these other cities that were close by, with Sodom being one of them.
Kedorlaomer was the king of Elam.
Elam.
Elam was one of the Ites, Elamites,
okay.
Hittites,
mm-hmm.
Canaanites.
And remember, you know, what happened to Shem? He was cursed by Noah to be a servant.
Yep.
And so we see prophecy being fulfilled here even with the Canaanites. But, so from Elam came the Sodom, right?
Right.
So together, they come together and they decide they're going to go to war, and they invaded five cities that lay near the plain of Jordan, Sodom.
I want to say something about Sodom and Gomorrah for mm-hmm. just a second. You know, we talk about Sodomites, homosexuals, transgender, people pursuing the approbation, sexual approbation. But Sodom and Gomorrah was more than just sexual perversion. There was a whole lot of evil going on in that city, and it wasn't just the sexual immorality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the example is murder.
Mm-hmm.
Murder was just, to just do it, it's like the, I don't remember which one it was. There was a, it went to, I'm getting out of this topic, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. A king takes his concubine with him, and they go into this guest home. Was this in Sodom? Mm. And then it was in the Benjamite territory.
Okay.
And then the Sodomites want to have their way with the man that was in the house.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then the strangest thing, we can't imagine this now, but if perversion continues, it is something that could happen. He said, well, here, take this woman.
Mm-hmm.
I said, we don't want the woman. We want the man.
Yeah.
These are other men. Well, at any rate, they decide to accept the woman. He just pushed her outside, and they had their way with her, and she died.
Left her dead on the doorstep.
Left her dead on the doorstep, and he took her home, carved her up, and sent her to all the other tribes.
Yeah.
And said, is this what we're going to have as our brothers?
Mm-hmm.
And so they all got together, and they attacked the Benjamites.
Mm. Well,
and
yes.
And so what I'm getting at is, what went on in Sodom and Gomorrah was more than just plain homosexuality. although that's a symbol of the decadence that was going on.
I guess it was probably just a recreation of the world prior to the flood. Every evil of every imagination and evil enough that God destroyed it.
Yeah, just think about how terrible things would be if you did whatever you could think of.
Mm-hmm.
How evil man's thought, the evil that man can conceive of is unlimited.
Particularly when the spirit's not around.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, so I interrupted. Sorry about that diversion.
No, that was a good little rabbit trail. So, you know, these kings were not happy with the tributary powers, the foreign powers that were over them. They weren't getting what they thought they deserved. So they decide to make war on these cities, Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, I think is the way you say it, and Zoar. And they're fairly successful in raiding these cities and taking all the victuals and gold and treasures and I'm sure slaves, people. And I think that you got to remember Sodom and Gomorrah, these cities were wealthy cities. Remember, Sodom was one of the cities that Nimrod was a part of building, right? Great wealth, great cities of culture and entertainment and artificers of all types. So these weren't just little dusty streets. And I think that we need to take note that war comes about when pride and covetousness and ambition are the lusts of men. They become idols. So, sure, some wars can be fought over noble principles, but many times war is because of pride and covetousness and ambition.
I want what you got.
Yep. The have-nots. And so we see that happening here with these kings that start preying on these cities to enrich themselves. And the king of Sodom, he was alarmed and he tried to negotiate peace with them, but they wouldn't have it. So they routed the forces of Sodom. And it says that many of them died trying to escape through the slime pits. You remember Sodom probably had a lot of tar pits and such, bitumen pits, which is what, remember, Nimrod built the cities out of, with the fired clay and the bitumen for mortar. So they plundered the cities. And I think the other thing we've got to take into consideration from this story is when you take a look at Sodom, a great city of great wealth, you see that men were not only wealthy but wicked, and they abused the gifts of the bountiful providence with gluttony and excess, and they actually reaped God's judgment in this, that they were abused. And in this abuse, Lot, Abram's nephew, was taken captive. Now, don't forget, Lot was a very wealthy man, right? Had plenty of gold and silver and servants and herdsmen and animals, and it all got taken away from Lot, as well as Lot himself and his family and those close to him. So, Lot wasn't a terrible man.
Not in human terms.
No,
he wasn't
a terrible man. But I think, too, that, you know, even the greatest of men, they're not going to be exempt from life's troubles.
Or greed. Or pursuit of their own lust and desires.
You know, Ecclesiastes 9:2 says that all things come to alike to all. You know, the rain falls on the saved and the sinner, but so does trouble.
Yeah.
Now, there is a difference. Trouble comes to the sinner many times on his own accord, sometimes through God's judgment. Trouble comes upon the Christian by God's will and providence and for a purpose, and that purpose is to better us. So nothing happens to us from the sense of trouble coming upon us, being visited upon us by accident.
The Lord disciplines those whom he loves.
That's right. And sometimes it's for our betterment, it's for our learning, it's for our growth, our sanctification. Now, I don't know if that's what this was for Lot, but I imagine it opened his eyes a bit when he lost everything.
Yeah.
These kings come upon him, they descended upon him and took everything. And
including him.
So,
isn't that right?
Absolutely right.
And he was kidnapped.
So I think there's some wisdom to be found here, because remember what Lot did. Abram gave him the choice, where you want to go, what do you want? And Lot said, I'm going to go pitch my tent towards Sodom.
Now, right next to it.
What does that tell us? That tells us that...
that he was going to Lake Winnipesaukee all the time.
That we could...
Or Las Vegas, which was it?
We could we could certainly reap the worst by encamping close to wicked neighbors, can't we? Walking with wicked people. Befriending those that aren't righteous.
Well, it's so much fun, and there's so much, what is it, such a good feeling. And, yeah, give me another shot of that, whatever it is that you're smoking there, buddy.
Yeah. So, yeah, what I often told my children was, when you lay down in the mud with a pig, the pig doesn't get up looking cleaner.
No.
You know, you don't rub off on him, do you?
No, and another thing, if you decide to mud wrestle with a pig, that's a bad idea, because you get mud all over you, and the pig loves it. there's lots of sayings. Old country sayings that come out of a discussion of the rescue of Lot.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Lot decides to choose the best of the lands. He does it in his own fleshly capacity to preserve the wealth and the riches that he had. And isn't it just like God to take that from him? To take from him that which God gave him, when he thinks that he is sole purpose of preserving it for himself. God will deprive us of those types of blessings when we ourselves don't give him the joy of worship and consideration and faith and trust.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Lot didn't do that. So I'm not saying Lot was a bad man, but boy, he sure is reaping the whirlwind here. And it's a really great story, because so probably a sodomite, they don't know, but a sodomite escaped from all of this and ran. And he ran to Abram, right, who is encamped near Canaan. And Canaan, by the way, was a very prosperous place. And he told Abram what had happened, that they had taken Lot. And so Abram pulls together some men and decides to go rescue Lot. 318. That's not a big army to go up against four kings. But they were well trained. And that's not something that happens overnight either.
No.
So Abram had considered this long.
And they were born in his household.
Yes, raised up by him, his people, his tribe. and they were skilled in the art of war. So, so they take after this king that had taken Lot, and they divide their forces up, and they surprise them at night, and they absolutely rout them, and they take everything that those kings had plundered and stole. They took it all.
He recovered all the goods and brought back his relative Lot and his possessions together with the women and the other people, mm-hmm. which apparently they kidnapped not just Lot, but women and slaves and servants and mm-hmm. children. Who knows what all they took. And after Abram returned from defeating Chedorlaomer and the kings allied with him, the king of Sodom came out to meet him mm-hmm. in the valley of Shaveh, that is the king's valley. Now here we come to a different, very interesting story. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem. Now, for those of you who may not know where this is, you ever heard of Jerusalem? Mm-hmm. Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. That's where this happened, mm-hmm. at Jerusalem.
He was a king.
That's right. He was priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram, saying, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High." Notice how they gave glory, and they gave glory to God.
Mm-hmm.
He thanked Abram, but he thanked God most. "And blessed be God Most High, who delivered." He didn't give Abram credit for delivering the people.
No.
He said, "And blessed be God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hands."
Mm-hmm.
So Melchizedek praised God, gave some praise, and blessed Abram. He's blessed Abram and praised God, who delivered them, delivered the enemies into their hands. Then Abram gave him a tenth of everything.
Mm-hmm. Which is a tithe.
Right.
A tithe. So Melchizedek, we see here, is...
Now, I want to point out something to everybody out there. That doesn't mean you just give a tenth, or if you're not giving a tenth, that's not enough. Everything belongs to God. God owns everything.
That's right.
He gives you something, and people say, "Well, you're robbing God." No. God owns everything. Mm-hmm. What you're doing when you hand it back to him is you're thanking him. You're praising him.
Yeah, I don't think you give 10%. I think you give the amount that God leads you to give. And if you're not walking close enough with him to know what that amount is, then you got a problem.
That's right. Then what you do is you look at what's in your bank account and you divide it by 10%, mm-hmm. or multiply it by 10%, write the check, and you pat yourself on the back and say, "I've done a good deed."
No.
Now, I know that. I know that's no. I know it's
yeah,
no.
You know, before we pass by and get into Melchizedek, which is an interesting story nonetheless, I think it's interesting here also to note that although we are, as Christians, people of peace, and I think Melchizedek was known as the King of Peace. I think that might have been what his name meant, or one
yeah,
of the
King meant. Of Salem is Salem means
yeah,
peace.
Peace, King of Peace.
King of Peace.
But there is a time for war.
Yeah.
There is a time that war is warranted, and
and what did Melchizedek do to Abram? He blessed him because of what
mm-hmm.
he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he praised the God Most High for delivering the enemies into Abram's hands. So the notion that there is no just war, I mean, if you read the early fathers, and I'm trying to think of the one that he wrote, the City of God, and I'll think of it later. But at any rate, this was in about the 4th, 5th century, and he said there were just wars. And that's something, because there was a lot of discussion in the early church that Christians should never fight, turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
But then how do you reconcile that with self-defense?
This is very interesting, the tack we're taking here. This is the first time in the Bible that we hear the mention of a war.
Right.
And in this one chapter, we see really two wars. One war that was fought out of greed and covetousness and pride and gluttony. And the other that was fought over
righteousness,
rescuing his nephew, yeah, and setting right what they had done, which was wrong. You see four kings that were far from God. And you see Abram, who was close to God. You see an unrighteous war, and you see a righteous war. And that in itself shows that you have two types of war. And although our religion preaches peace, it doesn't forbid us to go to war, but for a righteous cause. And we see that played out with Phineas, which is another story for another day. But let's talk about Melchizedek for a minute. He brought forth this bread and wine. So he was feeding these 310 people, or more than that, because Abram brought back Lot and all of his people as well. And so that's no small task to feed that many people. But then I think one of the interesting things here is Melchizedek is one of the first typical Christ types we see mentioned in Genesis.
What does he do? What did Christ do? Christ blessed people.
Well,
and it also says that Melchizedek, king of Salem, he was a priest.
That's right.
Jesus was a priest.
That's right.
Of the God Most High, and mm-hmm. he blessed Abram, and and then at any rate, there are several things here. If you keep reading,
Melchizedek. We find in Hebrews, it talks in chapter 7, for this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham, returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by interpretation king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually. So Christ shares some of the same characteristics that Melchizedek had. There we have no record of his beginning and no record of his end. He was a king. He was the king of peace. And he also was a holy priest, not of the Levite realm. Levite priests were born and they died. Melchizedek, we have no record of him dying. And of course, Christ will be a priest that will be in a priest forever, continually. And so that's why it says that Christ was a high priest after the order of Melchizedek.
And that's in the New Testament.
That's in the New Testament in Hebrews, yeah.
Yep.
And it spoke of in Psalms, it spoke of in Isaiah as well. Melchizedek is a very interesting character here. And so the king of Sodom says, hey, Abraham, I'm going to give you what you want. You know, take these goods. And Abraham told the king of Sodom, I lifted my hand up to God. I don't need anything from you. I don't even want a shoelace from you. Give to my men what they deserve, what they've eaten, let them have. But as far as me, no, I don't want anything, because I don't want you to ever be able to say that you enriched me.
Well, I think that might be a good place to stop. We are at the end of our session. It always goes quicker than we think it should. And we will pick up again, maybe with this next time. If not, we'll keep moving on in the book of Genesis.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
One of the reasons the Bible's so disrespected is because so many people in our...
We are not mighty by the world's measure, nor wise, nor of noble standing. And yet God has called us out as a royal priesthood, that we should show forth his truth and declare his glory. Though our program rejoices in seeing the handiwork of God's creation, and we stand amazed at his order and intelligent design, we do not rest our message there, nor do we seek to persuade or convince you by the wisdom and science of this age. For we are not here to prove God by secular means, nor add to the sufficiency of Christ crucified, which is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. Until our next broadcast, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's love.